all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning or good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio, everyone out there. It's a pleasure listening, having you listen to us today. My name is Dale Thronberry and we are sitting here in a sauna bath. We've had electrical problems all around the area with some major storms, and so now we're just on generator and it's the air conditioning is not working. So if you hear my voice fading away, it's only because I'm melting, much like the witch in the Wizard of Oz. We've got a great program for you today here on Veterans Radio, and I'm going to let you know who's sponsoring us. That's important. First of all, we've got American House, the Canton Foundation, Schoolcraft College, Legal Help for Veterans, and Rally Point, which is a social and business website for veterans. And we're going to talk, or you're going to hear more about them a little bit more as we go along. And there's a couple of announcements that I need to get to you. Bob Gould is in the other room. We've got the doors open, so if we start yelling back and forth, you're going to be able to hear everybody as we go along here. So it should be kind of an exciting day. I'm looking forward to it. But we do have a couple of announcements, and I wanted to get right to them. The first of all, as I mentioned, the Canton Community Foundation is sponsoring their Veterans Summit, and that is this Wednesday, September 10th, 2014, at the Laurel Manor in Livonia, Michigan, and it runs from 8 o'clock till 2 in the afternoon. For all you veterans out there, spouses of veterans, veterans' families, grandpas, so on out there, this is a great opportunity for you to meet with Veterans Service Organization representatives. They can explain your benefits to you. They can explain how to file claims. There will be people there that will help you be able to file disability claims if you have one. There will be people there to talk to you about how to utilize the VA system in general. So I think it's a great opportunity for you to do that, and I encourage you to get on down there to the Canton Communities Foundation's Veterans Summit. That's at Laurel Manor in Livonia, Michigan, this Wednesday, September 10th, from 8 to 2 o'clock. Be there, as they say, or be square. The second thing coming up is a good friend of ours, Rick Briggs, has set up an organization called Camp Liberty, and this is to build a stronger veteran community. And this is a great idea, and we've talked to Rick a couple of times on the program about this. I know our partner, Jim Falsone, has. And Camp Liberty is sponsoring an open house next Saturday, September 13th, from 10:30 till 4:30. And Camp Liberty is a wildlife habitat area, and learn how outdoor recreation helps our injured veterans and other individuals with health challenges. And they're going to have fun and games. They're going to give you tours there. Bob, you might need to know how to do this. They're going to teach you how to call wild game, shoot BB guns and archery. Fun for the whole family. That's Camp Liberty, and they are located at 13,400 Austin Road in Brooklyn, Michigan. That's 13,400 Austin Road in Brooklyn. It's out in the southwest corner of Washtenaw County for those in the local area. And again, this is a great opportunity. They're going to have prize raffles and barbecues and, wow, a special Liberty Bridge dedication in honor of Dr. Kellogg, Major United States Air Force. Oh, this is a good deal. This is another great activity. Camp Liberty, Austin Road, Brooklyn, Michigan, Saturday, September 13th, 2014, from 10:30 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. Another one. Be there. More. There's more. We have an event recognizing Detroit's contribution to the Arsenal of Democracy, and I should have had Bob read this one because Bob has done a number of programs on the Arsenal of Democracy, and for those of you familiar with where we are located in Ann Arbor, the Arsenal of Democracy was right down the road at, most cases, Willow Run, where Rosie the Riveter did a lot of her work. But this is coming up on Tuesday, September 16th at noon, and they're going to be showing the documentary, The Arsenal of Democracy, which is called A Rivet in Time. It features the stories of American House residents. American House is a senior living community, and it's going to refer to many of the people who live in the American House, and there's a documentary for them, and they're going to be showing this documentary at the Detroit Historical Society, which is at 5401 Woodward Avenue in Detroit, Michigan, where the past is the present. You need to reserve space in this. It says the event is free and all are welcome, so please RSVP by September 10th, which is Wednesday, I believe. You can do this by email at rsvp@americanhouse.com. That's rsvp@americanhouse.com. Please RSVP by September 10th. I think they want to make sure that they have enough space for everybody to come in and enjoy it. It says there's a lunch at Wrigley Hall, courtesy of the American House Culinary Team. Following the mayor's, there are going to be speakers, and then you're going to get to watch the documentary at the Booth Auditorium. This is really cool. I'm trying to figure out how we can get to go to this one, Bob. Sounds like a good idea. So the American House, make sure you RSVP. RSVP American House by this Wednesday so that they know what's happening. Whew. A lot of things going on out there in the veterans community, and if you have anything that you want us to know about and you want us to announce to people, you can send an email to either Dale at Veterans Radio or Bob at Veterans Radio, and we'll get you on the air. And this is across the country because all of you know that we are broadcasting on the Internet, and our listeners are around the world. So if you have something going on in California, let us know about it, and we will announce it on the program. You're listening to Veterans Radio. You can give us a call during the program locally here at 732-822-1600. Another event that's coming up in a week or so is the MIA POW Recognition Week. And joining me on the program right now is a representative of that organization, and his name is Admiral Robert Shoemaker. And Admiral Shoemaker was a Naval Academy graduate in 1956, distinguished graduate. He was the second POW shot down over North Vietnam. He was a prisoner from February 11, 1965 until February 12, 1973. One of the originators of the TAP code, and we'll talk more about that, that sustained the POWs and let them communicate with each other. He was also, supposedly, it says right here in his bio, he was the smartest man in Hanoi. And he later earned a PhD in aeronautics and was roundly recognized as brilliant yet humble. And he still regularly pilots an airplane he built himself. That takes a lot of courage. His son, Grant, was only 1 month old when he deployed to Vietnam. He was 8 when he finally returned. He was called Shu by many of his fellow POWs, and we've had many of these amazing men on Veterans Radio. And today we want to welcome Rear Admiral Robert Bob Shoemaker. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Nice to be with you.
How's that for an introduction?
Yeah, really. But you said a mouthful.
I know. I bet you didn't even know you did all those things, did you?
No, I'm worn out already.
Well, I want to thank you very much, sir, for agreeing to be on the program today. And first of all, I wanted if you could fill us in on POW MIA Appreciation Week, which is coming up not this week but next week, correct?
That's correct. And there are ceremonies throughout the country. One large one at the Pentagon on the, I believe it's the 18th of September.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a little bit about the organization, or am I throwing you a curveball here?
Well, kind of a curveball. I thought we were just going to talk about my experiences in Vietnam. But I know there are a lot of service organizations that do honor the POWs and their service.
Well, I think what we can do for our listeners is that they can go to their computer and look up POW MIA ceremonies and so forth for POW MIA Appreciation Week, and there'll be a whole list of activities that are going on around the world. I know that this organization was started by three of the wives of you men who were captured and kept in Hanoi for those long times, and they were the one that kept the whole idea of POWs, MIAs in front of the American public. Otherwise, it kind of would have been a news story that was pushed to the back page. And so we have to congratulate those women, and maybe we can get them on the program next week, or at least one of them, to talk a little bit more about this organization next week about that.
Okay, and I think you're referring to the what's called the National League of Families,
mm-hmm.
and you're right that during the first 4 or 5 years of imprisonment, we were kind of pushed into the background. And then the wives, in particular, Admiral Stockdale's wife and Admiral Denton's wife and a few mm-hmm. others formed this organization to bring to the forefront the treatment that we were receiving there.
Right, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about some of the myths that occurred during the Vietnam War with our second guest today. It's a group called Vietnam Veterans for Factual History. So I'm kind of curious to find out because, you know, we kept talking about the Geneva Convention and you know, we were treating our prisoners obviously more fairly than they were treating, you know, their prisoners. And it was a very sorry time period for all of us to find out what happened to you men. And I guess we should get right into that story, since you were the second person to join the POW in Hanoi. So what happened to you?
Well, the first one was a guy named Everett Alvarez, and he was shot down in August of 1964. He was an A-4 pilot, just a marvelous man. He's my example of a Horatio Alger of the United States, in that, you know, he came from a somewhat humble background and, you know, did marvelously in Vietnam, and later became a deputy secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I came along 6 months later flying an F-8 Crusader off the aircraft carrier Coral Sea, and it was February of 1965, and the North Vietnamese had attacked a hotel in a place called Pleiku in South Vietnam. And so my ship launched a retaliatory raid, and it was really a bad weather day, and in my run-in, I was flying a whole lot lower than I would normally because of the weather, and I got hit in the tail section, and it caused the airplane to flip upside down and point nose down, and I was going to key down on the mic and say, 403, I'm hit, but I didn't even have time for that, so I punched out, and later figured that the chute opened about 35 feet above the ground, so it was kind of a hairy, hairy day.
You said 35 feet above the ground?
Right, yeah. I broke my back in the process.
What happened to you?
Well, you know, I stayed, I tried to hide. I was going to try to make it to the coast when it turned dark, because it was about noontime. And a whole horde of Vietnamese soldiers came looking for me and eventually got me, put me in front of a firing squad. And I was kind of hoping they'd pull the trigger, but I'm kind of glad they didn't now. Because I was hurting, I was really hurting pretty bad with this broken back. Then they loaded me in a truck and in a Jeep. I was handcuffed and all, and blindfolded. And from that point, it was probably about 250 miles up the road to Hanoi, their main cap, through the bounciest road you could ever imagine. And so that was my first couple of days in Vietnam.
We've talked with other POWs who said they, you know, it sounded like a similar experience where they would threaten to execute you, you know, hoping, I guess that you would say something, and I'm assuming that just like all the rest of them, you didn't tell them anything they wanted to hear.
Well, you know, we're, as military people, we're obliged through the Geneva Conventions to give only four items, called the Big Four, which is name, rank, serial number, and date of birth. And most of us tried to stick to that as best we could.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as time went on, they got pretty mean and started torturing us with a number of different techniques they had, the most severe of which was what we call the rope treatment, because they would get you in a seated position and your elbows would be tied together and your breastbone would feel like it's bursting apart.
Oh.
And then they would move your head. They took a rope and pulled your head on down to your feet. And it was just, you know, really excruciating. So, you know, most of us went over there thinking that, you know, they're not going to give any more than name, rank, serial number, date of birth.
Mm-hmm.
But they could squeeze stuff out of you. So you learned how to lie pretty fast.
I understand that, and we're going to take a break, and I'm asking that you please stay on the line with me, would you, Admiral Stockman?
Sure enough. All right, I'll stay.
And we will do that. And we're talking with Rear Admiral Shoemaker, who is the number two POW at the Hanoi Hilton back in 1965, is when he got shot down. And we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Schoolcraft College is proud to have served the communities of Southeast Michigan for five decades. So it should come as no surprise that they're just as committed to serving those who have served our country. Schoolcraft College Veteran Services provides assistance to veterans using their educational benefits. They help with the VA benefits application process, provide academic advising, and plan programs of study according to VA guidelines. Classes are forming now in Livonia and Garden City. Visit schoolcraft.edu for more information.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with my guest right now is Admiral Shoemaker, Robert, better known as Bob Shoemaker, who was a POW from February 1965 to February 1973. If you've got a question...
That was a long time. That was eight years and one day.
I was going to say, that's a... You were there for the whole war, it seemed like.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Which is really unfortunate. But for our listeners, if you have a question you want to ask this amazing man, give us a call here at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600.
Let me interject to your audience, which I assume a great number of veterans have served, and I'm just really proud of their service. You know, there's nothing you could do greater than to contribute your efforts to the betterment of the United States, and so my hat's off, and I salute all your listeners.
Thank you very much. Obviously, we salute you too, sir. This is what we try to do on Veterans Radio. We want to tell the stories of just ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. And you mentioned that they did the, they're pulling your shoulder blades apart or pulling them so tight together that your chest felt like it was going to explode out of you. And we have talked to other POWs that went through this similar feeling. How long were you there by yourself, or were you isolated from, there were only two of you, right, to begin with?
Well, but, people came in afterwards, and so after about 3 months, I peeked out this little wormhole in the door, and I saw another American out there. So I took a chance, and they let us out very briefly to dump our sanitation buckets, and I left them a note. I was just trying to cheer them up by saying in this note, welcome to the Hanoi Hilton, and somehow that name stuck, so everybody knows it as the Hanoi Hilton now.
Right.
But what was different about this war compared, say, to World War II and before is that there was a very strong propaganda element in it, and I guess most of us at that time didn't appreciate or understand that there's more to war than just bombs and bullets, that the Vietnamese really understood this, and they would try to squeeze us, not so much for military information, but instead for propaganda value. And, they would torture us to make statements, condemning the war. And so it was a different type of war.
Well, we've seen, propaganda pieces that came out. When I was in Vietnam in 1969, we were well aware of what was happening to you men up north. But because the student riots were starting to occur and marching for peace and so on and so forth. And there have been rumors throughout the years that these were actually organized by the North Vietnamese because they figured if they could, win the hearts and minds of the American public and turn the public against the war, then...
Well, I know that Admiral Stockdale, who's now deceased, said that his captors would tell him, we're going to win this war, and we're going to win it on the streets of New York City and Chicago and Los Angeles, because exactly what you said. But you asked me originally about isolation, and that was one of their techniques, was to put us in complete isolation and keep us from communicating with fellow POWs. And so in my instance, I was in solitary confinement for 3 years, and it was in a cell that was 4 feet wide and 9 feet long, and about 12 feet high, and all concrete, and no windows, and a little hatch on the door so the guard could snap open this hatch to see if you're misbehaving. And misbehaving to them, among other things, meant trying to communicate with other POWs.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that through a tapping system we had by tapping through the wall in a coded sense.
when you were in isolation, I'm sorry for lack of words here. I'm just trying to figure out how you were able to maintain your mental capacities and your morale while they were, you know, had you locked away like that.
Well, you know, we owe it most of all to this tap code, and mm-hmm. You know, we would put our ear against the wall and we'd be tapping with a knuckle, but we'd be reading the shadows under the door to make sure we didn't get caught, because mm-hmm. they eventually killed I got a cellmate eventually, but they took him out and killed him just because they caught him communicating. But to keep your spirits high, I guess I have to back up a little bit. There were 591 POWs that got released eventually. But the Vietnamese picked 11 guys that they thought were the leaders of the group. And mm-hmm. at the time, I was the lieutenant commander, which is like a major in the Army.
Okay.
I guess they thought I was the leader. Admiral Stockdale was one, Admiral Denton. And they put us into a special prison, which was isolated from all the others. And we were all in solitary cells. And we were kind of, quite frankly, proud of this distinction of being recognized as leaders. But we called this camp Alcatraz, and so we're known as the Alcatraz 11. And there's a book written recently. It was released in February called Defiant. And it was written mm-hmm. by a young guy from Atlanta named Alvin Townley. But he spent a couple of years researching the stories of each of these 11 guys. Now, one of them died over there, but, you know, 10 of us survived. But, you know, we in any group like that, everybody comes to the party, so to speak, mm-hmm. with some contribution. Like, for example, I knew something about French because I married a French-Canadian gal. And the guy next to me wanted to learn how to speak French, so every day I'd tap five French words.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but sure. Can you explain to our audience a little bit about the tap code, and now you're teaching somebody French using the tap code?
Right, yeah, well, it's kind of a simple code, and it came about kind of serendipitously, and that one of the POWs just happened to remember overhearing a conversation. But if the audience, your audience, would imagine a square that has five rows in it and five columns, mm-hmm. so there are 25 spaces. Well, you can't squeeze 26 letters in, so we have to leave off the letter K. But if you just start mm-hmm. feeding in the letters across the top, A, B, C, D, and E, if you wanted to send the letter D, for example, you would tap once, pause, and then tap four times.
So, oh, okay.
So the first taps, group of taps, would be the row number, and the second would be the column number. So you got pretty fast at this thing. You know, in fact, you'd even have calluses on your knuckles. You know, the Vietnamese would come in and inspect your knuckles. But you could probably transmit it four or five words a minute, and we got to be masters of abbreviation there too.
Didn't the Vietnamese figure this one out, or did they just not care?
Oh no, they really.
I'm
cared.
Sure they would have cared. Yeah.
Yeah, they had as many guards as they had prisoners. You know, just because their philosophy was if they kept a person in isolation and restricted all his input. And then just would feed them things, because we had a loudspeaker in the roof of our ceiling of our mm-hmm. cell, where they would feed us all kinds of stuff about how they were winning the war and stuff. But they just never they would catch a few guys, you know. But we were really pretty sneaky about getting this tapping going.
I just think it's fascinating that you're able to not only come up with this tap code, but then you're able to teach people a foreign language and using your tap code.
Well, the punchline of this thing is I fed them five words a day, and then I'd have to amplify it with rhymes with a certain English word, you know. And so that went on for 2.5 years. And then finally there was a rescue attempt over there called the Santé Raid.
Right,
And even though it didn't result in freeing any prisoners, it caused the Vietnamese to take us out of solitary confinement and put us into a larger cell block. And even though in 2.5 years I'd never gotten more than 10 feet away from this guy next to me. I never had seen him. And so when I did see him after 2.5 years, he could speak French better than I could, and I've never yet figured that out.
That's amazing. We're talking with POW Robert Schumann, who is filling us in on what happened with the POWs over there. If you'd like to get in a conversation here on Veterans Radio, give us a call, toll-free at 844-838-1600, 844-838-1600, or you can call us locally at 734-822-1600, and we'd be more than happy to put you on the air with him. I'm going to have to impress upon you, sir, if I can keep you on the program for a little bit longer. We're trying to reach our next guest and haven't been able to do so. Is that a problem?
No, it's not.
Oh, thank you so very much. We're going to take a break in about a minute. So at the height, you mentioned the number of total POWs. Is that, you said 500 and some?
591, yes.
591. And how many of them were disappeared? Let's put it that way.
You know, I don't have an exact, I should have a number, but I think about, I can think of about 9 of them that either died over there or just never got returned.
Mm-hmm. When we come back from our break, I want you to describe the conditions again for our audience, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to take a break here in about 30 seconds. He's jumping up and down over there trying to make sure that we get everything going here. Again, just to remind us, if there's a representative out there for Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, we were unable to reach Del Vecchio right now. So if any of you are listening, please give us a call at one of those numbers. And you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be right back after these messages. Give us a call, 734-822-1600.
This is the Blaze Radio News. I'm Dave Perkins.
I'm preparing the country to make sure that we deal with a threat from ISIL.
On the topic of ISIS, the president moving from no strategy to strategy. The Blaze Radio's Tom Peace reports.
Keep in mind, this is something that we know how to do. We've been dealing with terrorist threats for quite some time. This administration has systematically dismantled al-Qaeda and the Fatah.
President Obama appearing on NBC's Meet the Press. He says that American troops on the ground is not an option, but the U.S. knows how to fight terrorists. The president meeting with congressional leaders Tuesday before laying out his ISIS strategy before the American people. I'm Tom Peace, The Blaze News.
Meanwhile, the man who would win the presidential election against Obama if it was held today, but keeps saying he's not running, Mitt Romney, not impressed with the ISIS strategy so far.
And yet the president was, I don't know, too busy on the golf course to pick up the phone and meet with the leaders around the world and to say, what happens if, you know, the Pentagon was going through what-if scenarios, but the president apparently wasn't, hasn't developed a strategy. And I don't know whether you can't see reality from a fairway. But the president has not seen the reality internationally.
And the Blaze Radio's Chris Barnes answers the question, why is Obama postponing presidential action on immigration?
The White House saying the president's concluded that circumventing Congress through executive actions on immigration during the campaign would politicize the issue and hurt future efforts to pass a broad overhaul. But many say it's politics that have motivated this change in course. Ford O'Connell is chairman of the Civic Forum PAC.
King Obama decided to hold off because he knew that if he pushed basically any executive action rooted in amnesty, he'd be handing the Senate in 2014 to Republicans.
O'Connell speaking on Fox News. Immigrant advocates and Latino groups are blasting the change in plan.
I'm Dave Perkins. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Major Bud Day's F-100 was hit by ground fire, destroying his hydraulics and putting the plane into a steep dive. Details after this. Day ejected from his damaged plane. He smashed against the plane and broke his arm in 3 places. North Vietnamese militiamen captured him when he landed. When he refused to answer questions, they staged a mock execution and then hung him from a rafter by his feet for several hours. On his 5th day in camp, he untied himself and escaped. On his 2nd night on the run, a bomb landed near the sleeping Day, leaving him bleeding from his ears and sinuses and sent shrapnel into his leg. Between the 12th and 15th day, he heard helicopters and stumbled to the sound. The choppers left just before he got to the landing zone. The next morning, he ran into a North Vietnamese patrol. As he limped toward the jungle, he was shot in the leg and hand and captured soon afterward. He was moved to the Hanoi Hilton. His untreated wounds were infected, and he suffered malnutrition. The fingers on both hands were curled into fists as a result of torture. He regained some motion by peeling them back, down the muzzles of the guns, and began to sing the Star Spangled Banner. The other men, including Admiral James Stockdale, joined him. They were released on March 14, 1973, and President Ford presented the Medal of Honor to both Day and Stockdale on March 6, 1976. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a military veteran? Do you need help finding out about your benefits? With over 600,000 veterans in Michigan, many don't have the proper information to obtain the benefits they are entitled to. All Michigan veterans are invited to attend the Canton Community Foundation's annual Veterans Summit. Topics will include VA and health care eligibility, pension, and disability benefits. This free event will be held Wednesday, September 10th at Laurel Manor in Livonia, Michigan. Registration is required, so go to cantonfoundation.org. That's cantonfoundation.org.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'm your host today on our Veterans Radio program. And we are talking with Admiral Robert Shoemaker, who was second person shot down over North Vietnam in February of 1965. And we're just going to talk with Admiral Shoemaker just for a couple of more minutes about the conditions that he had to live with when he was in Hanoi. Can you do that for us, Admiral?
You know, I do want to say, though, that to your audience that, you know, I hope they always remain loyal to the United States and they're proud of their service because it's a great country that we're defending. But you asked about the conditions. You know, the food wasn't very good, and you knew it wasn't good because as you try to stand up from a seated position, you'd have to hold on to something to keep from blacking out because your heart couldn't adjust to the increased load. But, you know, I'm often asked what gets you through a bad experience like that. And one of the elements is humor. And, you know, they had us pretty cowed over there so we couldn't talk. And, you know, I hadn't heard an American voice in a long time. And right during an air raid, I heard an American voice from across the camp shouting. And that was really unusual. And he was shouting as if he were shouting to the American fighter planes that were diving in. There was a lot of noise, afterburners and guns going off, and we'd been on cabbage soup for about 6 months. So what he was shouting to the bombers was, "Bomb the cabbage patches." So you got to keep a sense of humor about things, too.
You do. You know, we just played a Medal of Honor. We do these every week. About Bud Day, and we've had him on the program, and as I mentioned, we've had a number of other POWs that were on the program, and each one of them we talked about their their experiences or their thoughts about religion and how it became a very important part of their survival. Did that occur to you also?
Oh, absolutely, and you know, I listened to that bit just a minute ago, and Bud Day was one of my best friends. But we have a church service, and then that is after the rescue attempt. We had we were living in my case with about 45 guys in one cell block, and we on Sunday morning we had a church service, and the Vietnamese got really upset about this thing. They came into the cell block, grabbed the three ministers, and hauled them off and stuck them in leg irons for it turned out to be about 6 weeks. But as they're leading them off, Bud starts singing the Star Spangled Banner, and the whole camp started doing that. Well, 6 weeks later, back came the ministers. The one minister was a marvelous guy named Robbie Reisner. And parenthetically, I've got to say that both Bud and Robbie Reisner passed away this year. But anyway, so Bud Day asked Robbie, well, what did it feel like to hear the Star Spangled Banner after 5.5 years of imprisonment? And Robbie said, you know what, I felt like I could go bear hunting with a switch. I felt like I was 9 feet tall. And so Ross Perot apparently heard this story, and he engaged a sculptor. And if you go out to the Air Force Academy on the quadrangle, there's a statue of Robbie Reisner in his plate gear and pistol and plate helmet. It happens to be 9 feet tall.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I'm going to have to kind of end our interview. And I just want to ask you to come back on the program. Maybe we can get together with a couple of other POWs and talk about your stories and your revelations and how your life has changed. Because what I'm always so surprised about is how many of you went on to be successful, whether you were in the military or in business and everywhere else, and that you were able to, I'm not going to say put the experience behind you entirely, but you were able to move forward. Could you talk about that just a minute?
You're right. You have to look forward and not completely forget the past, but at least profit from it.
Well, Admiral Shoemaker, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and I want to remind our audience to check out those POW MIA activities that will be occurring next week, and hopefully we will have you back on the program, sir.
Okay, nice talking with you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Well, we were able to contact our guest, and so we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, and you're listening to Veterans Radio.
Living at American House is like being on a cruise ship with all the lovely surroundings, the many, many activities, and the people to share with. It's so comfortable to be here. I feel safe. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up.
When you move into an American House senior living community, you open the door to a new world of possibilities. Our life enrichment directors are committed to enhancing the lives of residents every day. We look forward to finding out what interests you.
I just get dressed up and walk down to the dining room and enjoy my meals in the company of other people at my table.
For more moments made in American House, go to AmericanHouse.com. Again, that's AmericanHouse.com. Or watch us at YouTube.com/AmericanHouseLiving.
Living here has enriched my life. I'm Carol Huck, and I made in American House.
We're back on Veterans Radio. I'm your host today, Dale Throneberry, and our guest, not exactly the guest we were planning on, but we've got a great fill-in. His name is Steve Sherman, and Steve, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, and I'm very proud to follow Admiral Shoemaker.
Isn't that cool that we had the opportunity to talk with him?
Yes, it is.
That's what fascinates me about doing this program for over 10 years. We've met men and women that just go above and beyond. It seems like every day, not only in their military lives, but also in their civilian lives. And so I'm going to ask you some questions. You are a member of the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, correct?
That is correct.
So tell me how you came about with this organization. What was the purpose of it?
Well, this organization is, in fact, a project of Radix Foundation, which is a 501c3 corporation specifically designed to promote the history of the Vietnam War. From the point of view of the people who fought it.
Okay.
This particular project was put together this year because of experiences that we had in really last year with a conference of the National Archives on Vietnam in 1963, in which we had absolutely no say in the content and the selection of the contributors. It was mm-hmm. very much a left-wing, or at least a non-revisionist group of speakers.
So we can relate to your story. I had to jump in. This is one of the things we always talk about. We want to get the history evidence and the history information from the people that were actually there, because no offense to authors, but they're going to pick and choose what they want to use. And a veteran who was in Vietnam, in this case, is going to tell you what they saw, where they were, and exactly what happened.
That's correct.
And
that's what we're trying to do here. We have a website called Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, vvfh.org. And if you go there and you click on the events tab, you can see the conference that we held, the video the C-SPAN put on from August 5th.
Right, and that's where we heard about you is that I watched that C-SPAN story, and I found it really fascinating with some of the things that you guys are talking about. And we've got about 15 minutes for the program, so let's start going through some of the myths that you feel are most exaggerated.
Well, there are so many myths, and there are so many people who are pretending that they don't continue today, that we really feel that we have to go through and shoot them all down individually. The primary myths are that academia has this analysis of the war that it was illegal, immoral, and unwinnable. And our prime purpose is to show that all three of those positions are wrong.
And how did you go about doing that?
Well, we had three very good speakers. One was Bob Turner, who is teaching at the University of Virginia faculty for national security law.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Vietnam veteran. He studied the Vietnam War and has just absolutely a font of information. And he talked about the illegality of the war, or the legality of the war, rather. And he is certainly the man to do that. Second speaker talked about immorality of the war, or the lack thereof, and his name is Nguyen Ngoc Bích. He is a Vietnamese, originally from Vietnam, been in the United States since 1975, has worked for Radio Free Asia, and author of numerous books, and translator of all many things, and he, with his insight and wisdom, talked about the immorality of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Case.
Well, we saw a lot of evidence of that. And we just got done talking to a man who was tortured for almost 8 years, and they never admitted that they did those things.
And the third speaker was Colonel Andrew Finlayson, who was a Marine colonel, worked with the PRU program, but he was also on the National Planning Staff. So he's intimately familiar with the whys and wherefores of planning on that level. And he talked about the winnability of the war.
Well, let's talk about a couple of these things. Well, first of all, I want to encourage our audience, if you have any questions, give us a call here at 734-822-1600 if you have a question. Or you can also reach us here on our toll-free number, which is 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET. 1600. And
I hope you'll also encourage them to go to our website, because on the website, for example, we have a list of some 38 myths that we consider significant.
I know. I'm looking at them right now.
And we also also have another website, which is not linked here, I don't believe, but it's called viet-myths.net, which is a 36-hour seminar that was held in 2004 at Simmons College.
Let me ask you about this seminar, and I want to encourage our people to go. You can go to C-SPAN and watch this program that you put on, that you challenged people to a debate, in essence, at the National Press Club, and this was shown on C-SPAN just the other day, and now it is up so you can watch it anytime you want. So if you go to C-SPAN and look for the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, you're going to be able to watch this. But I was fascinated by the questions that were being addressed by Mr. Turner and Finlayson and Mr. Bích.
Right.
My Vietnamese is starting to fall away from me. I didn't do so well the first time through. But let's take a look at some of these questions, because I think they're really kind of interesting. Well, first of all, you talked about that we had no reason to be involved in Vietnam, and that has been demystified many times, starting with the Pentagon Papers.
That's correct. It's a very simple formula. We had treaty arrangements through CETO, And the process that was followed was basically the process for the authorization for the use of military force, which we call the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. So on a legal plane, everything was appropriate. As far as our reasons for having that situation is that communists at all walks from all the countries just told us that they were going to use wars of national liberation to block us out of all parts of the world, and we had to find a response for it. Vietnam is where we held our ground.
Right, and that is true. And if you read the Pentagon Papers, and I'm not sure exactly when Daniel Ellsberg was on the program and talking about those, is that was the official government stance, and that's what we have to realize here, that wasn't, they didn't just jump into this war just willy-nilly just because it was going on. That there was a reasoning behind it, and that we have to be cautious of what the stories are out there about, you know, whether it was for profit or whatever it might have been. But let's look at another issue here. You talk about the South Vietnamese government denied the people a free election on unification.
Well, there was not going to be a free election in the North, and the Diem government decided that they did not want to even make an effort to do so. Another set of documents to read beside the Pentagon Papers called the Foreign Relations of the United States. This is a State Department publication that's been put out since the days of Andrew Johnson. And just on Vietnam alone, there's some 14,000 documents. And in those documents, you can see U.S. government officials arguing with the Diem government and trying to encourage them at least to go through the motions of talking with the North about elections. But they understood that there was not going to be a free election, and the North certainly had shown that to be the fact in the way that they conducted their politics.
One of the issues that I believe it was Professor Turner talked about was the establishment of the Ho Chi Minh Trail and how we were not able to bomb it, even while it was being constructed. Would you like to address that issue a little bit?
The Ho Chi Minh Trail was inaugurated on Ho Chi Minh's birthday in 1959, and that was why it was 559 unit was the name of the unit that was organized to set it up. So they had been working on this for quite some time. At the end of, or in 1962, Averell Harriman negotiated some accords about Laos, and ostensibly it was going to neutralize Laos, but we withdrew our forces from Laos, and the North Vietnamese, who had some 20,000 soldiers there, withdrew some 23 people. And for reasons that I can only ascribe to the ego of Averell Harriman, all of his acolytes in the State Department did not want to see his major accomplishment in life being whisked aside or ignored. So they sort of pretended that it was all working, and we weren't supposed to go into Laos, and we weren't supposed to do things in Laos. But that's no way to conduct a war. If your enemy is 10 clicks away from you, you can't pretend that he doesn't exist. You've got to find out what he's doing and do the best you can.
I was at a meeting a couple of months ago with a number of pilots, of helicopter pilots, and we were all talking about our missions in places we weren't supposed to go, because that was the only way we could fight the mission.
I had a friend one time who does sports parachute jumping, and he'd go to various countries to earn jump wings. When he was in Poland, he was introduced to a Polish colonel who said, "I was in Laos the same time you weren't in Laos."
I wasn't in Laos the same time you weren't there either, right? I think that's what happened there. One of the questions you have here is that, well, we already know this by talking with Admiral Shoemaker, that American POWs and other prisoners of the communists were treated humanely. We know that is not true.
Probably owe that one to Hanoi Jane.
She didn't do very well at that point in her life, and it hasn't gotten much better, unfortunately. But how about the, what we've got here, the South Vietnamese never really fought well. They just weren't really committed to the fight. How about that?
Well, if you look at 1972, where the South Vietnamese were basically on their own, they did a very good job. But they had good American support. They had all the bullets and ammunition that they could use. They repelled a major invasion from the north. We cut off their funds in 1974. The same invasion reoccurred in 1975. They didn't have bullets. They didn't have any kind of support. They were promised air support by Nixon, who was not able to give it. And they crumpled. And the fault lies not in the South Vietnamese Army, but in the Congress that refused to allow us to expend funds to assist our allies.
I always have to do a major sigh on that one because, you know, when you make promises to these countries and we don't follow through on them, it always comes back to bite us, it seems, on a regular basis.
Look at what's going on in Ukraine today.
We made
a promise to them that they wouldn't need to have the same kind of armaments that they had previously had. They gave up their nuclear weapons to the Russians based on our promise to defend them.
I agree. Here's one of my favorite ones that I get more upset about. Most U.S. troops in Vietnam were poor soldiers. They lacked discipline, were poorly led, and usually were on some sort of substance is what they're looking at here.
We can thank John Kerry for that myth. He was
yes.
one of the primary proponents of it, and we have Nick Turse these days, which is trying to incorporate the same thing. But if we look back at our own experiences in the war, and if we look back at the facts of the war, things like My Lai were very much an exception. And the notable fact about My Lai is an American helicopter pilot put his helicopter in between Cali's troops and the civilians and said, "Stop this, or I'm going to turn my machine guns on you."
Right. That's a true story. I know about that one. And the other thing is that I think probably some of the problems, and there was always talked about this in the military, is as the war went on and on and on, the people that were getting drafted toward the end of the war were not as motivated as those that were involved at the beginning of the war. I think that you think that might be the case?
It might be, but it probably doesn't really amount to that much because on the whole, the surveys of veterans we've had shown that about 75% of us were really volunteers, and that we would have done it again even knowing the outcome, and a number of other facts of that ilk which don't suggest a changeover in the personnel. There probably was a lot more information coming from the United States that was loosening the morale of the troops. And I think that Kerry really was onto something there, at least when he said, "Who wants to be the last person to die?" But
yeah,
there's a movie coming out shortly about the April offensive with the American advisors with the Vietnamese and the heroism that they displayed in combating the communists, both the Americans and the Vietnamese. And American troops do outstanding things. That's why they're so well recognized.
I agree with you. And that I served with, I would, trusted them with my life and would do it again today. I think many of us feel the same way.
That's the primary reason that we acted the way we did, is because we wanted to retain the respect of our peers.
Here's one last question, because we're coming up to the top of the hour here. And it just talks about the idea that the Tet Offensive was a devastating blow to the U.S. and South Vietnamese forces and major military victory for the communists. Would you like to...
The Tet Offensive absolutely wiped out the local communists. The North Vietnamese put the South Vietnamese in front of them, ostensibly because they knew where they were going. The North Vietnamese didn't. But really what the net effect was is to turn them into cannon fodder, and they were just absolutely wiped out in the Tet Offensive. Afterward, the local local VC infrastructure was very thin. And from that point on, I was there in 68. I was back in 1970, and it was just a day and night difference. It was just a totally different circumstance.
Well, one of the points that you make in your list here of the myths and lies about propaganda about the Vietnam War is the idea that the VC were an idealistic, nationalistic group, just like the American Minutemen. I don't think so.
Look, I don't think American Minutemen went around, you know, slaughtering school teachers.
No, they didn't. We had a woman on the program many, many years ago. Her name was Young Crawl, and she said that North Vietnamese would come into a village and say, "Are you with us or are you against us?" If you're not, you know, if they're not with them, they just killed them right in the village square. And you know, people are going to do what they need to do to survive. Steve Sherman, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I'm sorry we didn't get a little bit more time. Maybe we can have you back on again in the future. This is the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History. Anything you want to say in the last 20 seconds?
20 seconds. Well, I'd like people to turn their attention to the Vietnam Education Center, which is going on behind the wall. We have a little bit of an argument with them because the academics they have put in there to write up the narrative of the Vietnam War are the same people we ran into in November or last September at the Maricon.
Okay.
And while they're good people at heart, we really would like to have more faith in the output. And like Reagan said, we trust, but we'd like to verify.
Okay. We will do that. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. Coming up next week, we've got Bob Gould to be the host. His guests are Jim McManus. He's going to be talking about September Hope, the story of Market Garden and General Montgomery, and Kevin Himmel, who's going to be talking about Patton. Until then, you are dismissed.